And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conan. How are you doing,
Phil? Good afternoon, Phil.
And today we're going to talk to Murray Dobbin, who has written an article for Tai-E, and I think it appears also in Rabbled and Counterpunch. Murray Dobbin is a author of several books and a columnist who is known pretty much from Canada around the world, and he's been following very closely the matter, the developments in Ukraine. We'll be talking to him about that. Norman Otis Richmond will be joining us at 5:30 to talk about Hurricane Carter, who died on April the 20th. The stars seem to be falling out of the firmament these days. We've lost Dan Heap, who was a very prominent figure in all the best struggles in Canada over the years, and probably we hope in a week's time we'll be discussing him. Murray Dobbin, as I just mentioned, is the author of five books, and he's a former columnist with Financial Post and the Winnipeg Free Press, and he's a board member of Canadians for Fair Tax, or Tax Fairness, pardon me, and he's on the advisory board of the Rideau Institute. He lives in Powell River. Boy, we all envy him that. I think he's joining us now. Are you there, Murray?
I am, Phil.
Hey, thanks very much. Murray, you have a really an interesting article, timely, of course. It's in Tai-E, and I've seen it in Counterpunch. There's a lot of interest in this. The title of it is Putin, Petro Rubles, and Our PM's Bad Posture on Ukraine, Harper is Useful Idiot. And the question that you pose for yourself is, for whom? But I want to start with your characterization of the crisis itself in Ukraine, because you say that the Prime Minister misdescribes this and fails to call attention to this as, your words, U.S. Created the crisis in the first place. Mr. Harper doesn't remark on it. When you say the U.S. created it, could you talk about that a bit?
Well, sure. I mean, one of the most outrageous things that that Harper says about this is that Russia has rejected, joining the West in terms of trade and the economy and diplomacy and all that. And it's absolutely false. I mean, as much as Putin, Putin is not a nice man, obviously. He's, a former KGB. He's an autocrat, and he can be quite ruthless himself. So I'm not suggesting in any way that...
I mean, he's a representative leader, as we find him in the world.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I'm no fan of Mr. Putin. I think he's, he's an oligarch, and he has helped a lot of people make a lot of money that they shouldn't have. On the other hand, to characterize him as rejecting the West is completely false. The fact is that they made the West and Russia actually came to an agreement in the mid-1990s that Russia would not object to East Germany joining West Germany if NATO agreed not to push its boundaries east towards the border of Russia. It was a perfectly reasonable agreement, and I think part of the problem here is that the West just fails to even acknowledge that Russia might actually have some interests, some security interests itself. They behave as if the only people with security interests are the Ukraine and the West, and so they immediately broke that deal. I mean, there are many countries now, including Poland, that are members of NATO and pushing up against the eastern border of Russia, and Russia feels threatened by them, and they were also going to, put the anti-ballistic missile shield. All of these things were provocations to Russia and a complete failure to recognize that they had legitimate security concerns. So ever since that agreement was signed, the West has completely failed to live up to it, and and their effort to replace Yanukovych, the pro Russia leader of Ukraine, was really quite blatant, and they actually encouraged. McCain was in the Ukraine, and a number of other American politicians encouraging more radical action on the part of demonstrators, and actually, whether directly or indirectly, encouraged the most right wing and sort of neo fascist groups like Right Sector and Svoboda to take the leadership role. So the West is completely completely complicit, and really Russia finally acted in its own interest in a way that, you know, I think was obviously wrong, but completely understandable. It's as if, you know, you really begin to wonder. You sort of assume that people, you know, in governments like the United States and Germany and others, actually are pretty smart, but you begin to wonder if maybe they're just not incompetent, because this was just a completely ham-handed move, predictable by a first-year political science student, and they walked into it, and now they have a crisis that they don't know what to do with.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, and speaking of that, the point about the transfer of power that took place here, which is really quite dramatic, and I notice they can't get their terminology straight. Occasionally they say, well, Yanukovych quit, and then he said, well, I didn't quit. They said, well, he's not in, not in office properly or something, but he's visiting Russia. Or anyhow, and when they're pressed, someone says, well, let's get down to business. Let's go back to your constitution, and let's see how you can resolve this by an election. They say, no, we had a revolution.
Right.
We've really had a dramatic shift here. And when they say that, I don't see Canadian editorialists, or certainly not Mr. Harper or the opposition, asking, do you have a constitution? And are you going to have an electoral test? Because what I'm struck by, and I want your comment on, is these dramatic changes that are being introduced by people who haven't any, they've lost touch with any electorate in Ukraine, obviously.
Well, that's right. And, you know, and the whole notion that there was a revolution is dubious at best. It's a PR spin at worst. Mm-hmm. You know, because you violently take over some of the government buildings and threaten the life of the duly elected president, doesn't make it a revolution. It makes it a coup. Mm-hmm. And the groups that were most involved in that coup were heavily armed. Are now, a significant part of the ruling cabinet of that country. So this is a classic coup, not a military coup, obviously, because the military itself was not involved, but it was an armed coup. And the replacement of Yanukovych by an interim president, who of course the Americans had chosen. There was a taped conversation with one of the State Department bureaucrats, and she actually named the current president as the person the United States wanted. So,
yes.
I mean, it is...
just a weird coincidence. He ended up in power.
Just happened. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is so transparent and yet unreported. Mm-hmm. So you never expect the mainstream media, especially in the States, which sees its job as supporting whatever the administration is doing. You never expect, the full truth. But, I mean, the truth is so transparently available. If you just go to European newspapers, if you go to The Guardian or The Independent or other European newspapers, and yet, citizens of Canada and the United States, unless they look for these stories, are simply denied access to what is transparent to most people in the world.
Yeah. We're speaking to Murray Dobbin, and of course the article is in Taiyi and Counterpunch and all over the world, actually, on Ukraine. Harper is a useful idiot. There are things happening there. I would certainly wish that somebody would take the time to report. According to Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, they were told that when they had this last Geneva meeting, that while the government of Ukraine, the one that's there now, would agree to something, they could not, that would not impinge on the rights of the Maidan, they called it, which is to say there's some force there which these signatures don't apply to. And then I hear, but again, we're not getting a sufficient reporting to know much about it, that they're forming, this new government is forming either a National Guard or a militia, which seems to be incorporating those from the right sector led by this man, Yarosh, who is unshy about confessing his admiration for various fascist leaders and Canada's enemies in World War II.
Right.
But do you know anything about those things? I mean, why don't we get some attention to those? Are rather important details in my mind.
Well, exactly. I mean, in the parallel that comes to mind is all the stuff we don't hear about Libya. it's a similar situation where, you know, there was all this talk about, you know, duty to protect and the no-fly zone and all this, and we were going to have democracy in Libya. Well, now we have a failed state in Libya. And we almost, you know, every once in a while you get, you know, one of the media outlets will have a small story about, you know, about rebels seizing an oil field. But in terms of, any kind of mea culpa on the part of the media, you see none of that, and you certainly don't see any of the politicians, whether it's NDP liberal or conservative, talking about, you know, the consequences of the destruction of Libya. So I have heard those stories too, and I look for any coverage of it in the media, and you know the head of Right Sector at one point, and this was reported I think in the Guardian, said that if Russia, you know, starts playing with the gas supply, they'll blow up the pipeline. This is a guy who is going to run for president, and he's talking about blowing up pipelines.
Yeah.
and he says, and the formation of a militia. He basically said, well, we already have our own arms, so we're good to go, basically. So you begin to wonder, you know, how and where did he get those arms?
Yes.
And, you know, the strong
and is he going to give them up, or has anybody asked him?
Has anybody asked him? Exactly. I think the president is afraid of these guys, and, you know, probably with good reason.
Mm-hmm.
The army seems completely inept. Apparently, a story I read yesterday, they only have 9,000 combat-ready troops for a huge country the size of Ukraine, and I don't think it would take long for Right Sector and Svoboda to find 9,000 eager right-wing nationalists.
Yeah, just put the uniforms on them.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, my understanding is that's what they are calling for today. They're saying they want a new draft, and they want, of course, patriots. So
right.
When there would be a little loyalty test.
That's right.
Before you're allowed into the Ukrainian army.
Well, exactly. I mean, are you willing to kill Russians? You know, it's that sort of the test. I mean, because that's the, and I think that the other thing that people don't realize is that Svoboda and Right Sector are very much anti-EU as well. These are not folks who want to have a democratic relationship with Western Europe. These are ultranationalists who are as contemptuous of the EU and the United States as they are of Russia. So
yes.
I think there were stories originally saying the United States had attempted to keep Right Sector and Svoboda out of the cabinet, but were unsuccessful in doing that. I mean, which is so typical. You know, the notion that you can simply manipulate a country, which your staff couldn't find on a map the week before. notion that you can do that and without any understanding of the political culture and the groups with power in that society.
Ms. Newland found them when she took them cakes. She was something like Marie Antoinette. She actually did give them cake.
I know. If it weren't so tragic, it would be funny.
Yeah, it has to be. It's dark. I want to get to the big question, which you introduced: petrodollar, rubles, and dollars. But before I do that, I have to ask you about this. You quote a nice phrase, which I don't want history to lose this one. It's the Canadian government is practicing incremental posturing.
Right. Well, there was an expert, on the site I give a link to it. But it basically talks about what you do when you don't actually have any power to influence events. You do incremental posturing, so you keep upping the rhetorical ante, but you actually you don't have any power to do anything. And it's interesting when you hear Obama talk. He says, "Yes, I've been talking to my European allies." Never mentions Canada, right? I mean, Canada's never involved. But the only reason Canada was ever made a part of the G7 was that the United States wanted a yes man to be there at the table with all the European powers. There's a number of countries now who have larger GDPs than Canada, but they're not part of the G7 because the United States doesn't want them.
Yeah, when they hear that some planes have come from Canada, it probably doesn't worry the guys on the other side of the fence that much.
Seven planes.
Yeah.
No, I don't think anything Canada's done has had much influence with Putin.
This is, we're speaking to Murray Dobbin, excellent article, Putin, Petro Rubles and our PM's bad posture. Now, you say that, as writers, as analysts are supposed to do, what is this really about? You introduced the possibility that a major factor in the thinking of the West, to the degree that they're thinking, is a currency issue. And you point out that Libya, Iraq, and Iran all got into some trouble when they suggested they didn't want to use dollars anymore, that they were thinking of something else. And you raise the specter of rubles.
The United States, you know, they have said in the past, the U.S., you know, used to be the dollar was backed by gold, and it was backed by this, and it was backed by that. What they've said about the American dollar is it's backed by the Pentagon. And that's essentially, you know, that is the key to American hegemony in the world, is its ability to just keep printing money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and which is why the American dollar has dropped by 30% over the last 10 years. It just keeps printing money. And the only reason it can do that is that everyone in the world needs American dollars in order to engage in trade. So in particular, in oil and gas, so that if I'm the Chinese government and I want to buy, a million barrels of oil, I have to first buy a million dollars to pay for that oil
at the value they tell you that it has.
Well, I mean, there is a market. You know, I mean, the American dollar is sort of on the open market, and it does go down. In fact, the United States is hoping it goes down because it'll, you know, all of its debt. You know, if the dollar goes to half its original value, then your debt gets cut in half as well. But it's clear that It's all this external demand for the American dollar that keeps its value where it is. I mean, if all of a sudden there was no external demand for the American dollar, it would probably go down to, 15 to 20 cents, which would be, catastrophic for the American economy. But because the dollar is the trading currency, they can keep printing money and keep, military bases in 120 countries in the world, and basically,
they care that much about freedom.
Yeah, they maintain their status as a superpower, and even though the media did cover some of this, I mean, certainly one of the side benefits of invading Iraq was stopping it from abandoning the U.S. dollar as the currency for oil. Gaddafi was going to set up a gold-based currency for all of Africa. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of misunderstanding about the role of Gaddafi. He was portrayed rightly as a bit of a lunatic in some ways. But this guy was an African nationalist who was setting up was going to replace the World Bank and the IMF with African institutions, and he was going to establish a gold-based currency for all of Africa, which that really got the attention of the Americans and Europeans. And Iran was also talking about this. So those three countries, all of which were, minor military powers and were easily disposed of. But when you're talking China and Russia, Brazil and India, talking about putting together a basket of currencies, that's a whole different picture. These countries are not subject to the Pentagon, and that's why the United States is so worried. And Russia has been talking about this for some time, but the whole crisis with the Ukraine has accelerated their intention of creating a petroruble, and they are cooperating with China on this as well.
It would only be logical, right? I mean, if you're going to be you're coming in for all sorts of punitive treatment, you may as well turn your back on that, because you're not going to. The only thing they see for you at the end of the road is removal, right?
Well, exactly. And so Russia now is pivoting east, as they say, and saying, okay, if the West is so backward and so determined and so ideologically driven that they don't want to deal with us, then we'll deal with China. And in the next couple of weeks, they're going to sign an enormous multi-trillion-dollar or multi-trillion-ruble gas deal with China. And so, China has, a huge appetite for gas and for oil, and Russia will just turn to that market. And as I also pointed out in the article, negotiations between Germany and China to open what they call the New Silk Road, which is intended to...
What is it? It goes Berlin to, what, Shanghai?
Well, to basically...
through to Russia.
Well, and part of it would be through Russia, but certainly it parallels, you know, it parallels Russia all the way east. And this is intended to spur development in western China, and that development could be, you know, could be fed natural gas from Russia. So, and it's really intended to spur development in that whole corridor between China and Germany. So Germany at some point, I mean, it's obviously gone along with the NATO approach to Russia at this point, but its economic interest will rule. And it's the, I think it's the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. And if it's the key to this new trade route with China, then many of the European countries that now trade with Germany will be using Germany as a, you know, as a conduit for their goods. And so,
yeah, you use the term it's a giant magnet.
Exactly.
And surely they're already saying to the Americans, you expect us to give this up because you are piqued with Moscow?
Yeah, exactly. And especially, I mean, there's absolutely no, I mean, you just imagine policymakers who actually think these things through before they act must be just shaking their heads saying, what the hell have we done here?
I understand the German press, by the way, is saying many of the things you are saying. Former leaders Kohl and Schroeder have both said, well, no, Russia has a perfectly reasonable position. They said,
well, yes.
Whether they agree with it, they say it's understandable. We can't lose our minds over this.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a, what's his name? He's a Canadian political scientist, and an article in the Globe the other day, and is usually quite conservative, but he was basically saying the same thing and pointing out that the West has completely blown it in terms of its relationships with Russia, you know, pushing up against Russia, pushing NATO, and of course the brief war between Russia and Georgia, 10 years ago or so, also encouraged by the West. It's just like,
yeah, it was McCain that time, is my memory.
Yeah, I
mean, he said we're all Georgians. I thought he meant Atlanta.
Oh, God, the man is an idiot, and he ran for president. You know, it just shows you how scary the United States can be, that these are the quality of people you get running for office, people who never read anything.
It seems to be a qualification.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the deal. But, it just seems nonsensical that the most powerful nation in the world would engage in this kind of completely reckless and uninformed foreign policy. Driven by, who knows what. It's like people just don't even understand the new role that the United States will be assigned in the next 15 to 20 years, and are, basically delusional about how the world is beginning to work.
Yeah. Now, again, just coming back to the Prime Minister, the last question here is you point out he seems to be a stalking horse for this rather ignorant position. But, the Canadian population, as whenever they do any surveys, are really actually quite skeptical. Yet, we can't seem to find any kind of consensus around anybody to say, hey, wait a minute, could we, we don't have a Schroeder. We don't have a Kohl.
No, we don't have a single politician.
We don't even have a Carter.
No. Well, a Carter, yeah. I mean, God, I wish we had a Carter. I mean, anybody who has the jam to write a book about Israeli apartheid is someone I would be happy to have in Canada. That's right. I mean, and the NDP is absolutely chicken shit, pardon my language, when it comes
that.
To foreign policy.
I speak
The same on Israel. It was completely cowardly on Libya, cowardly on Ukraine. It's the kind of politics actually that Harper does. The NDP does the same kind of thing. It calculates, they might actually have to come up with a principled position and then explain it to someone. So, but that would be beyond the call of duty. And so you just go along. In fact, the NDP actually thought Harper should go further. So, utterly without political leadership on these foreign policy issues, which is a tragedy, because it's an area that the NDP or the Liberals, I don't even care who yeah. does it, could stake out and say,
oh, absolutely.
You know, there's an enormous area here for yeah. distinguishing yeah. yourself from this warmongering mm-hmm. lunacy coming out of the PMO.
Yeah, under the other guy's flag.
Exactly.
Murray Dobbin, we are very grateful. It's a great article. We always look forward to your writing, the Tyee, and of course, people could just go to Murray Blogs, Murray Robbins. Jeez, it's Murray Robbins.
MurrayDobbin.ca.
I was going to get there. Well, Murray, thanks again. We really appreciate it.
Happy to do it.
Okay,
Doug. Okay, bye.
Bye. Murray Dobbin, and his columns are seen in Rabble and Counterpunch, and you can find. He also published 5 excellent books. We're going to be in a few moments talking to Otis Richmond. I think Phil, you have an announcement. Phil has a show Tuesdays at 12, but it's going to.
We're moving. Classical Underground will go to Wednesdays at 6 p.m. starting on May the 14th. Tomorrow and next week we'll still be on the Tuesday noon hour, and then we will migrate, so to speak, and really looking forward to this exciting development in our show. We'll still
May
have
the 14th,
2 hours.
6 p.m.
There you are.
You'll be driving people home.
Well,
with
yes, and
great music.
And then the problem,
or welcoming them,
and then the problem is, you see, you got to soothe them, because of course they'll be driving on the Gardner and the potholes will be catching them and and all that sort of stuff.
They didn't fix them.
No, Rob Ford talked a good line, but he didn't do anything.
It didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
Now listen, I have another announcement before we go take a break here and come back with Norman Otis Richmond. At Regent Park at 6 o'clock tonight. So this is your late notice. But by the way, people prefer late notices. They decide within a 30-minute framework of what they're going to do next. So here's what you're going to do next. 6 o'clock, Regent Park Focus Youth, the Media Arts Center, 38 Regent Street. It's 365 Days of African Liberation Film Series. And that's, again, 6. And you go to Regent Park Focus. But it's 38 Richmond, 6 p.m., that's this evening. So you're listening to the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM, and we'll be back in a moment.